This is the Quality News Network. President Bush vetoed a $600 billion measure financing federal education, health, and labor programs for the budget year that began October 1st. Democrats pledged to seek more Republican support and reverse the president's action. Stocks rebounded higher today, up over 300 points. Analysts say investors were relieved following an outlook by Goldman Sachs. We'll have details coming up in our business report. Senate Democrats are threatening President Bush that they will withhold approving more funds for the Iraq War unless he agrees to start bringing troops home. The House and Senate plan to vote on a $50 billion measure by the end of the week. 3,000 soldiers are scheduled to be sent home from Diyala Province. According to a spokesperson from the military, most of the brigade will be home for Christmas, and all will be gone by January. They will not be replaced by a new unit. $1.6 trillion is the price tag a Democratic committee has put on the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. A report released today includes so-called hidden costs, like long-term health care for veterans and interest payments on money borrowed. Bank of America announced today it will write down $3 billion in fourth quarter. The country's second-largest bank warned its losses could grow as the market struggles with mortgage lending. Two people were killed and 10 injured when a bomb exploded at the Philippines House of Representatives today. The blast killed Congressman Wahab Akbar, who reportedly had ties to an Islamic extremist group. Investigators determined the bomb was placed near Akbar's car, leading to speculation that he may have been the target. In Pakistan, police are arresting supporters of Benazir Bhutto who are violating the government's ban on public gatherings. Bhutto, again under house arrest, is demanding Pakistani President Pervez Musharraf resign. Musharraf must lift his state of emergency order within 9 days or face suspension from the 53-nation Commonwealth of Britain. Musharraf also has been ordered to live up to his earlier promise to step down as chief of his country's military. And in Tehran, the Iranian Supreme Court has upheld the death sentence against a Kurdish journalist accused of providing U.S. intelligence with information on Kurds in Iraq. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news coming up next.
Hi, I'm Brian Gingrich of Monterey Mattress Company. The only way to travel is by using the very best, and the very best in a major sleep product is any mattress from Monterey Mattress Company. Literally serving all parts of the world, we have been building the finest latex foam and innerspring mattresses for well over 20 years. Using our world-famous hotels as a measuring stick, you'll more often hear the name Monterey Mattress, as we supply over 100 resort hotels in this area. Far exceeding industry standards, these mattresses are available to you at factory prices. In addition to the local recognition, Monterey Mattress Company has been shipping beds worldwide to the many visitors who have experienced a great night's sleep here. This is the ultimate endorsement enjoyed by very few businesses. Monterey Mattress Company. We simply build the best, whether for your home or world-renowned resorts. Visit us today at 1714 Contra Costa in Sand City or on the World Wide Web at MontereyMattress.com. Sleep like a panda bear.
According to the Centers for Disease Control, the U.S. sets the record in sexually transmitted diseases. More than a million cases of chlamydia were reported in the U.S. Gonorrhea is also on the rise. Health officials say the higher rate could be due to better screening. The nation's biggest retailer, Walmart, announced third quarter profit rose almost 8%, beating estimates. International sales also increased 17%. Walmart raised its full year outlook heading into the holidays. Shares of Goldman Sachs jumped 8% today after their CEO announced the investment firm doesn't expect any big write-downs. Analysts had speculated the firm may have to take a big loss for bad mortgage positions, as was the case for Merrill Lynch and Citigroup. Crude oil prices fell sharply for the second day, dropping to $90 a barrel at one point. The drop came following an announcement by the International Energy Agency that it will cut its estimate of global oil demand. A survey also showed that OPEC increased oil production in October. And currently, light sweet crude oil is trading down $3.45 at $91.17 a barrel. Gold is down $8.70. At $799 an ounce. The Dow Jones ended up 319 points. The NASDAQ is up 87 points and the S&P 500 41 points. There's more on our news site.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go again. Very refreshing conversation last night on the program. Last night's program being a little bit of a combination of a brief acknowledgement and memorialization of Veterans Day and the original Armistice Day, followed by a 2.5-hour conversation with award-winning West Virginia filmmaker B.J. Godmanson and our own Nanette from Coal River Mountain Watch about the depredations of mountaintop removal. And I've heard from some of you, and I'm glad that you felt like it was worth doing. I did too. So, you know, my appreciations for your your having understood that sometimes something, some single issue, is worth 2.5 hours of your time, my time, our time. On the other hand, we did sort of blow past Veterans Day, and in a way, that's the wrong phrase. We did our memorial. We marked the occasion. What should be a solemn occasion and not just a convenient excuse to get a day off from work. And we noted the sacrifice. And you know what? In doing it, in the time that we spent more time remembering America's veterans than did the President of the United States of America. You know this, of course. You know that George W. Bush, the deserter, the AWOL president, the first president ever to bring a criminal record to the White House, sent Richard B. Dick Cheney, who is the first vice president ever to bring a criminal record to that office, to do the stand-in and obligatory wreath-laying at the Tomb of the Unknowns at Arlington National Cemetery. You know that. You do know that, I trust. You know that a man who said that he had other priorities was the one who laid the wreath. You know that he was sent there by a man who bugged out on the Texas Air National Guard and went to Alabama and never even showed up at that unit while working on the Senate campaign of a revolting Republican by the name of Winton Blunt, who got his rear end handed to him in that election, by the way. You know all that. And if you sit for a moment and you let it roll around inside your soul, the idea that George W. Bush couldn't be bothered to make the short trip to Arlington National Cemetery to simply lay a wreath and say a few vacuous, hollow, stumbled-over words in regard to men and women who are far better than he will ever be. You know the sense of disgust that is brought on in an email that I have before me from a listener. Not going to tell you that listener's name. Just because I think it is so emblematic of what all Americans should be noting and feeling, that I'd like to let it stand for all of us. Mommy, Daddy, if the precious Lumpkin is in the room, this email has a couple of fun words in it, okay? So we might want to take the precious Lumpkin out of the room. And that's just fair warning. I try not to use words like exist in this email, and I don't like for folks to use them on the air unless, you know, it just gets on them and they can't help it. I won't subject anybody to a 7 or 11 or 20 or 40 second delay here, such as right-wingers like to use and people have to use who are still doing buggy whip, old-fashioned, worn-out, censored radio. Government-regulated radio. Unfree speech. I choose not to use them just as a function of my upbringing, I suppose. But when it comes from a listener, and when it comes the way this did, it is an integral part of the actual language, thought, feeling involved in the process of creating this. I'm not going to censor it, because I am not that powerful, and I am not that all-knowing, all-hearing, and all-seeing. So now that the little darlings are out of the room, I share with you what came in after the show last night. Subject line. So let me get this straight. Body of message. George Walker Bush had Cheney fill in for him at the laying of the wreath. The wreath that commemorates those that died in World War I. Got it. The war that cost my great-uncle his ability to walk more than two blocks wasn't enough for W to lay a wreath and say a few words. The tens and tens of thousands of dead from that war that laid the groundwork for the war that let his forebears make fucking shitloads of dough just prior to and during a war that Republican isolationists made sure we fought by killing the League of Nations, that wasn't enough for him to drop by and lay a fucking wreath and smile for the cameras? Got it. Personally, I side with Jimmy Breslin. Today, in an interview about the passing of Norman Mailer, Jimmy said, "Yeah, Norman didn't like war. He hated wars like the one caused by George Bush. Yeah, him, the guy that drinks N.A. beer on Air Force One till he belches it up. Only till he lands in Crawford and he can hit the real alcohol. Then he's loaded for days and goes back to D.C. Norman hated fakes." Any questions? Oh, Lord God, Billy Bob, tons and tons of questions, because it's all true. The Bush family, whether it be the Walkers or the Bushes or any of those other interminably snake-like, serpentine-entwined little Midwestern families that bred and interbred and amongbred until we wound up with President Inbred, made their fortunes on the backs of the doughboys. Yes, indeedy. Some made their fortunes in alliance with the Standard Oil Trust. But when World War I came along, it was some member of that hateful clan that got himself strategically placed on the War Materiels Board, I think it was called at the time. and the Bushes have been sucking off the public teat and have been, in fact, welfare queens ever since. And so, yeah, I don't know what he was doing. I don't know what was so important that the troops he says he support couldn't even be formally remembered by him at Arlington National Cemetery. I don't pretend to know, but I know that it disgusts me. I know that it sickens me. I know that I stood for a few moments at that little memorial downtown here that I told you about. Just went down, just stood on the bricks, read some of the bricks, read some of the names. From the Civil War forward, of people from this area who have served. And I made a conscious effort to keep those names alive in my own memory and to tell my children about them. I did that, me. And I'm a little bit of nothing in this world. A very teeny tiny speck, and I have the common decency to acknowledge it. I remember the words of Abraham Lincoln in the Gettysburg Address when he said, "The world will little know nor long remember what we say here today." Abraham Lincoln, for all his faults, and they were many, Abraham Lincoln understood how insignificant we each and individually are. What specks we are. What tiny, tiny, little remembered, seldom noticed bits of cosmic dust we are. But he also recognized in taking that train trip from Washington, D.C. to Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, in what, November of 1863? That there are some things we are all called upon to notice, and that such sacrifice is one of those things. Was it Willie Loman in Arthur Miller's Death of a Salesman who cried out, "Attention must be paid. Attention must be paid"? And yet, on what should be among the most hallowed of days, the very President of the United States can't be bothered to honor our hero dead. The second in line to the throne of Great Britain showed up in his little military suit for an Armistice Remembrance Day on Sunday. The Queen herself showed up for that same Remembrance Day. But George Bush, scion of a loser family, son, grandson of a Nazi collaborator, couldn't be bothered to show up and pay attention. There's another one of those old sayings out there. You might see it on a bumper sticker from time to time. Showing up is half the battle. George Bush has never been one for fighting battles. George Bush is one for having battles fought for him. Unless, of course, he's loaded out of his mind and screaming at his daddy, "Come on, we'll go at it, mano a mano, old man." And so I didn't feel it would be appropriate for us to begin the program and go somewhere else, and somewhere else we will indeed go without noting the fact that because Veterans Day is over, well, it doesn't give us an excuse to stop thinking about our veterans. Because God knows, at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, they aren't. They're only thinking about what the little toy soldiers can do for them next. And that should fill you with a chilling sense of revulsion that is abiding in its nature. It does me. Then again, who am I to tell you what you should feel? You either feel it or you don't. It either gives you that queasy, sickening, dropping, falling sensation in the pit of your stomach, or it doesn't. Or perhaps it's enough to have a Chinese-made yellow ribbon magnet hanging on the back of the gas guzzler. Maybe that's enough. But we all know it's not. And it is not enough to say, well, I have to meet with the Uzbeki ambassador today, so I can't go over to Arlington. This man has a cadre of people who do scheduling for him. And pardon me, but if you are the President of the United States, and if you are the scheduling secretary or whatever of the President of the United States, there are a few little dates on the calendar that you just circle in red, and there's no getting out of it. And I'm sorry if you've got the trots from drinking cheap beer last night, George, but you gotta, I don't know, put a cork in it and get over to Arlington and lay the wreath and say the words. You just gotta. No ambassador, nothing short of debilitation or, well, things we can't say because Agent Fred would probably be down on us like a duck on a June bug should stop you. I forget who, a coach or a teacher or something, one time said, I don't want any, no excuse is acceptable short of death or you bring me the severed limb. This is one of those. Christmas, not so much. Thanksgiving, eh. Memorial Day, yeah, that one. Veterans Day, oh boy. If you're a Democratic president, Labor Day goes on that list too. Just circle it in red, scheduling secretary, and I'm sorry, Mr. President, you know, you got to go lay the wreath. You know why? You know why he didn't go? You remember all the old stuff about how you determine who was a witch? There was a whole book of it written by some of those weirdo witch-burning, killing, murderous Italian and Spanish priests way back in the Inquisition, the French. And there was a whole hierarchy of things that could, you know, like, you know, they couldn't stand, you know, Satan can't stand to be around holy water. Well, in this particular instance, think of George Bush as a vampire. And consider that for him and his psyche, Arlington National Cemetery is ringed with garlic. Because that really is it. I am convinced in my own soul that when the presidential motorcade passes through the gates to that hallowed ground, Robert E. Lee's former plantation, gleefully taken from him at the end of the Civil War as punishment for the interment of Union soldiers that he was responsible for having killed. But when the presidential motorcade carrying George W. Bush passes through the gates of that hallowed ground, George W. Bush gets the shakes. He gets the shivers. He feels the sickness in his gut, and the yellow stripe down his back glows state road yellow, like the middle of the road. And he remembers what he did. Don't assume for a moment that George W. Bush is so mindless as to be unable unable to comprehend the gravity of what he did in what he referred to as his misspent youth? Don't think that somewhere down inside what passes for his soul, something doesn't scream when he drives by the Vietnam War Memorial, that black long wall. Because it does. Shakespeare said, "A hero dies but once, a coward dies a thousand deaths." And when George W. Bush passes through the gates of that hallowed ground at Arlington National Cemetery, he is surrounded by howling, indicting ghosts. They're the ghosts of white boys and black young men and Latino young men who answered the call of a draft in Midland, Texas, and did not come home from a fetid, stinking jungle thousands of miles away from the dust and heat and dry of Midland, Texas. He knows. And it is because a coward dies a thousand deaths that he huddles inside the White House this November and screams, "Don't make me go. Don't make me go. Mommy, Mommy, don't make me go. I can't go. I couldn't go then, and I can't go now. I don't want to go. I ain't got to go. I'm President of the United States, and you can't make me. You sent Uncle Dick. Here you go." And you wonder, why this country is in the ungodly mess that it is in. Do you really wonder? Do you? Considering what's in the White House, is it any amazement to you that we've been able to keep the wolf away from the door for a little while, but now the wolf is rabid, foaming at the mouth and pawing at the front steps? Is it any wonder? Somehow I should think not. So for all of those that George Bush couldn't be bothered to honor, let us not let Veterans Day end with the close of business Monday. Let us approach this with the same mindset that we often mention in regard to Christmas. Let us try to think every day. Think every day of those who went before. Because we've got some making up to do. And we've got to make up for cowards. And that takes a lot of work. You're listening to the Head On Radio Network. You're listening to listener-supported, independent media. You know how to reach the program, 877-443-2366, or if you can afford it for yourself, 304-658-5453. I'm Bob Kincaid.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Tune in to Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Hey. Thanks for lending an ear.
This is the story about a group of kids who volunteered.
We fixed stuff. Did some art projects with the kids.
Cleaned up the park.
We worked in the woods.
I just wanted to do something.
We fixed up this house.
Did something for the planet.
Hey, that was all I needed. And you know what? It was great.
It was a blast.
At first, they didn't know each other.
I didn't know anyone.
Well, that didn't last long.
This guy is really funny.
Me?
These are my new friends. These are really good new friends.
Are you into it?
Are You Into It is a volunteer program for kids like you who care. If you want to make a difference in your community and make friends, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH or check out our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
This definitely made a difference.
I feel like I can do everything now.
Yeah! A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
Can you see from your window? I can't see anything from mine. Flags on the side of the highway and scripture on grocery store signs. Maybe 18 was too early. Maybe 30 or 40 years too. You get your chance to make peace with the man, or he sent down his angel. Mamas and grandmamas love you, 'cause that's all they know how to do.
That song never fails to give me cold chills. Jason Isbell from an album entitled Sirens of the Ditch. The name of the song is Dress Blues. And there is an article from the Los Angeles Times by Luis Cinco, who is a L.A. Times staff photographer. And I read it today, and it's part and parcel of the reason that I say that we do veterans a disservice when we think of them only on a day. Oh, well, this is your day. You get to march in the parade. Well, wait a minute. You don't get to march in the parade in Long Beach, not if you're opposed to the war in Iraq and you've served your country and you've laid your life on the line. No, no, no. You can't be in the parade. You know that story, of course. But this particular story in the Los Angeles Times is it's a tough read. Two lives blurred together by a photo. It ran Sunday. It is the story of the so-called Marlboro Marine. The Marlboro Marine. If you recall, people like that life excuse for a hairdo, Sean Hannity, and Bill O'Reilly, and Savage, and Limbaugh, all the right-wing freakazoids, just had absolute schoolgirl crushes on Marine Lance Corporal James Blake Miller when the photograph came out during the siege of Fallujah, showing him with drops of blood running down his nose, grime and war paint all over his face, with that so-called 30-mile stare, and a Marlboro hanging from his lips. The Pentagon itself got one of those little crushes going, too. And he was quite the celebrity, was Marine Lance Corporal James Blake Miller. Cartons of cigarettes poured in to make sure that he always had a smoke. Luis Cinco shot the photo during the siege of Fallujah after several horrendous hours in which he had no certainty whatsoever that either he or Lance Corporal Miller or anyone around him would see the next day. They were, as the saying goes, pinned down. Cinco writes, I was embedded with Charlie Company of the 1st Battalion, 8th Marine Regiment, as it entered Fallujah, an insurgent stronghold in Iraq's Sunni Triangle, on November 8, 2004. We encountered heavy fire almost immediately. We were pinned down all night at a traffic circle where a 6-inch curb offered the only protection. I hunkered down in the gutter that endless night, praying for daylight, trying hard to make myself small. A cold rain came down. I cursed the Marines' illumination flares that wafted slowly earthward, making us wait an eternity for darkness to return. At dawn, the gunfire and explosions subsided. A white phosphorus artillery round burst overhead. White phosphorus. Didn't we say we didn't use that? Showering blazing hot tendrils. We came across three insurgents lying in the street. Two of them dead, their blood mixing with rainwater. The third, a wiry Arab youth, tried to mouth a few words. All I could think was, buddy, you're already dead. We rounded a corner and again came under heavy fire, forcing us to scramble for cover. I ran behind a Marine as we crossed the street, the bullets ricocheting at our feet. Gunfire poured down, and it seemed incredible that no one was hit. A pair of tanks rumbled down the road to shield us. The Marines kicked open the door of a house, and we all piled in. Miller and other Marines took positions on the rooftop. I set up my satellite phone to transmit photos, but as I worked downstairs in the kitchen, a deep rumble almost blew the room apart. I ran to the roof and saw smoldering ruins across a large vacant lot. Beneath a heap of bricks, men lay dead or dying. I sat down and collected my wits. Miller propped himself against a wall and lighted his cigarette. I transmitted the picture that night. Power in Fallujah had been cut in advance of the assault, forcing me to be judicious with my batteries. I considered not even sending Miller's picture, thinking my editors would prefer images of fierce combat. The photo of Miller was the last of 11 I sent that day. And after that is history. For you see, the Pentagon did the same thing to Lance Corporal Miller that it did with Jessica Lynch and that it tried to do with Pat Tillman. Desperate to come up with some sort, some kind, some form of public relations positive gambit, they used Lance Corporal Miller. Lance Corporal Miller said he was embarrassed about the photo's impact back home. Luis Cinco notes that clean-shaven and without war paint, Miller looked much younger than the battle-stressed warrior in the picture. Young enough, Cinco says, to be his son. But orders are orders, and Major General Richard F. Natonsky of the Marine Corps, head of the 1st Marine Division, made a special trip to see the Marlborough Marine. A first sergeant hollered over the radio, "Miller, get your ass up here." So he had to weave between earthen berms, run through bombed-out buildings, and make a mad sprint across a wide street to avoid sniper fire to go see the general. And the general looked at him and said that Americans had connected with the photo and that nobody wanted to see him wounded or dead. General Natonsky told him, "We can have you home tomorrow." Miller refused. Looked at him and said, "Your father raised one hell of a young man." And then Natonsky went back to his nice, safe, air-conditioned command post. And Miller zigzagged his way back to his own place in that devastation. This is all around the time of Fallujah, of course, you'll remember. Fallujah. You remember Fallujah. It's where we first found out that the United States military was using white phosphorus on civilian populations. It was, in fact, as we have found out later, a bit of revenge. Fallujah happened because, and you recall this, I'm sure, Fallujah happened because four Blackwater mercenaries were sent out, and they got busted and caught by the people that they had been tormenting, Iraqis, and having been caught, they were killed, their bodies burnt, dragged through the streets, and strung up from a bridge. And after that, Fallujah happened. And Fallujah was awful. And that was where Lance Corporal Miller became the Marlborough Marine. But Lance Corporal Miller's life since then has been significantly different from anything you would consider to be a hero's life. He came home. He was from Eastern Kentucky. And in reading this article, I felt a certain kinship, although I suppose that's hubris on my part. but I felt something that I recognized in reading Lance Corporal Miller's story of what happened when he went home. He eventually did get to go home. Before being sent home from Iraq, he had to fill out the standard questionnaire asking him if he was having any nightmares, asking him if he was having any bad thoughts. And he and all the other Marines around him knew that if you answer yes to any of these questions, it gets harder to get out of Iraq. And your career is over. So, heck no, heck no, heck no, heck no. No, no, no bad thoughts, no nightmares, no trouble getting to sleep, no nothing. No, just happy as can be. And so eventually he gets to go home. He goes home to an eastern Kentucky hamlet called Jonancy, or Jonancy. And quoting from the article, this photo as the Marlboro Marine to make it around the world. After that, not so much. Marlboro Marines are only good for as long as the public, to quote the general, what's his name, Natansky, as long as the public connects. And of course, that public connection took place on the pages of 100 or more newspapers, and it was plastered all over Fox News. CNN carried it. And yeah, folks like that life support, that life support system for a pathetic excuse of a human being, that haircut looking for a life, Sean Hannity, fairly orgasmed themselves over that photograph. But it was only over a photograph, you see. Young Mr. Miller has been to Washington. He was invited to go and tell his story to members of Congress, to tell them about PTSD. He accepted an award for coming forward and admitting PTSD, because apparently admitting something like that among military personnel is nigh unto unheard of. He wound up getting loaded, stayed out till 3 a.m. the night before he was supposed to go and talk to the exalted Mucky Mucks. He talked to them. They all said, well, thank you for your service, son. God bless you. God bless the American military. God bless America. And sent him on his way, and not a one of them promised to even so much as look into PTSD. One member of Congress said, we'll schedule something some other time. You know, I'm busy today. Then he goes, he gets his award, he comes back and says, let's get drunk. Then the marriage fell apart. He ran off, disappeared, filed for divorce. And Luis Cinco closes this particular portion of the story. He says, I flashed back to the chaos of combat in Fallujah. In the rattle and thunder, brick walls separated me from the world coming to an end. In the tight spaces, we were scared mindless. Everybody dragged deeply on cigarettes. Above the din, I heard what everybody was thinking. This is the end. I've never felt so completely alone. He says, I snapped back to the present, and before I knew it, the word spilled out. I have to ask you something, Blake, he said to young Miller. If I'd gone down in Fallujah, would you have carried me out? Damn straight, he said without hesitation. Okay, then, I said. I think you're wounded and pretty badly. I want to help you. And he looked at me for a moment, Cinco says, and replied, all right. I haven't read something that moved me as much as that in a long, long time. And I can only imagine what it is to go from where he was Iraq and that hell, and getting to come home to a place that is under the siege of mountaintop removal. You go from one scene of death and devastation to another. Oh yeah, returning veterans have had PTSD issues sitting in city traffic. They have it all over creation. But for me, this story resonated even harder when I saw what the young man had to come home to the place that he loved and called home and wanted to be home. And look at it. Because it's pretty bleak. You heard the stories last night. If you're in bad shape, living where mountaintop removal is will make it worse. If you're in good shape, it'll put you in bad shape. Physically, emotionally, mentally. And God only knows what the charges going off at the site would have done to that young man's psyche. But his is a story that is, and I don't mean to discount it, and I don't intend to, his is a story that is, what, one in 160,000, given the rotations, one in a half a million? One in a half a million, maybe 750,000? I don't know how many troops have rotated through Iraq. And George Bush can't show up for Veterans Day at Arlington National Cemetery. And yeah, I am damned offended by that. Damned offended. But beyond that, he also heads a VA that does a Pentagon that does everything in its power to minimize the claims and the injuries and the wounds that only manifest themselves when the fighting is over. Hence that questionnaire. You have any bad dreams? Think any bad thoughts? Nope. Okay, you're fine. Because then, when the average Joe veteran goes for help, you know what he finds out? Well, it says here, you said you didn't have any symptoms, boy! You a malingerer? You trying to get on the military dole? That's what that's for. They're called pre-existing conditions. That's why people are assessed going in as hard as they are now. That's why more people are let into the military with notations of pre-existing conditions on their records. So that when they come out shattered, broken, and betrayed, the military can say, no benefits for you because you were nuts going in, son. That ought to shake us to our bones with shame, shouldn't it? Are you ashamed? You should be. No, you didn't do it, but it's being done in your name. Sorry, I guess this is the night I'm telling you how you should feel. I think I'm projecting, because I'm telling you how I feel, and I feel shame. I feel shame for what happened to Blake Miller, the way he's been cast aside. I feel shame. I feel shame for every veteran who needs and is turned away, every veteran who receives substandard care, every veteran who watched the rats run by at that god-awful the portion of Walter Reed Hospital. I feel shame. I don't know how you could feel anything else. So we'll be back after the news. If you want to get involved in the program, chime right in. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4. Head on, This is America's liberal voice. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. $1.6 trillion is the price tag a Democratic committee has put on the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. A new report includes so-called hidden costs, like long-term health care for veterans and interest payments on money borrowed. The U.S. military is pulling 3,000 soldiers out of the Diyala province, taking the edge off of last summer's controversial 30,000 troop increase. Most of the brigade will be home by Christmas. A U.S. Marine facing trial on charges of involuntary manslaughter and the murders of several Iraqi women and children won't enter a plea until his case begins. Lance Corporal Stephen Tatum was arraigned today in Camp Pendleton, California. He faces a maximum penalty of 19 years in prison if found guilty. Four Turkish soldiers were killed in battles with Kurdistan Workers' Party guerrillas as Turkey sent special forces to the region bordering northern Iraq. Turkish officials have threatened an incursion into northern Iraq to root out rebels using the mountains as a base for further border attacks. In Tehran, the Iranian Supreme Court has upheld the death sentence against a Kurdish journalist accused of providing U.S. intelligence with information on Kurds in Iran. Two people were killed, 10 injured, when a bomb exploded at the Philippine House of Representatives today. The blast killed Congressman Wahab Akbar. He reportedly had ties to an Islamic extremist group. Investigators determined the bomb was placed near Akbar's car, leading to speculation that he may have been the target of an assassination. Pakistani police rounding up supporters of former Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto, throwing them in jail, saying they're violating the government's ban on public gatherings. Bhutto herself is under house arrest, demanding the immediate resignation of President General Pervez Musharraf. South Korea is asking the U.S., China, and North Korea to begin negotiations aimed at producing an official peace treaty to replace the armistice ending the Korean War that was five decades ago. And Israeli President Shimon Peres and Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas are in agreement that the upcoming Middle East peace conference is a historic opportunity and that failing to reach agreement would mean more trouble for the region. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We'll take a look at science and business news next.
Huelhauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their local banking.
So what do you look for when you decide where you're going to put all your millions?
Well, I haven't printed up enough to put it in the bank yet, but I guess for convenience, and pretty much it's like a grocery market. You get to meet the people there, and you build a little rapport with some of them.
You know, it's a local bank, but it's part of a network of local banks that give you big bank services.
Everything that I need as far as banking is concerned, they have it. Online banking is great for me. So I just like the services that they offer.
You ever taken your dog Cindy to the bank?
As a matter of fact, when I went to open my account, she was with me.
Ah!
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we have a horse come through one of these days. We've got a lot of cowboys come in and out of here, too.
Above and Beyond Banking from the network of preferred community banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
According to the Centers for Disease Control in the U.S., setting the record in sexual diseases. More than a million cases of chlamydia were reported in the U.S. Gonorrhea is also on the rise. Health officials say the higher rate could be due to better screening. President Bush vetoed legislation which would fund job training, education, and health programs. It is the sixth veto of his administration and the latest in a battle with Democratic Congress over domestic spending. Mr. Bush says the current U.S. economy remains strong despite taking some recent hits. He cited higher oil prices and a sagging housing market during a TV interview on Fox Business News this morning. Mr. Bush says he expects the U.S. dollar to, quote, rise on the back of a resilient economy. The nation's biggest retailer, Walmart, announcing third-quarter profit rose almost 8%, beating estimates. International sales also increased 17%. The company raised its full-year outlook heading into the holidays. Crude oil prices fell sharply for the second day, dropping to $90 a barrel. The drop came following an announcement by the International Energy Agency that it will cut its estimate of global oil demand, a survey also showing that OPEC increased oil production last month. Light sweet crude trading at $91.17 a barrel. Gold at $799 an ounce at today's close of Wall Street. The Dow up 317 points. More at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
We continue onward. There's lots more show tonight. 2 hours more to go, more or less. If you want to chime in on this issue, I certainly hope you will. This is conversation radio, after all. It's not lecture radio. Right? That's what the right-wingers do. Let's do go to the phones. During the interim, our good friend Phil from Daytona Beach, a veteran himself, called in, and we'll go straight to him. Hey, Phil, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Bob, and thanks for dedicating attention to this article. You mentioned that you were moved, you were shaken, and you were shamed, and that what's happening in Iraq with these soldiers is being done in our name. I'd like to, I'm hoping that others that are listening have similar feelings, and that the next step is, what do we do with those feelings? Do we act? You know what I mean? Do we
just internalize it and let it gnaw at our livers? I know.
You know what I'm saying? Are people, and I'm not directing this at you, Bob, personally. Are people shamed enough, moved enough, shaken enough to do something about it? You know?
Yeah.
As opposed to just shake your head and say, this is horrible. How could we let this happen? Because we're letting it happen. That's how we can let this happen. Because we're letting it happen. I'd like to offer some ideas to help these, that people can actually help these veterans coming back from Iraq, and it's really, really tough on them to speak out. Under this administration, soldiers get assassinated for speaking out. You mentioned Pat Tillman, you know, four of the Jessica Lynch's squad members ended up dead. We could go on and on. It's tough on these folks. This past weekend, the Veterans Day activities around the country, members of Veterans for Peace were arrested and treated very badly. And not you read the articles on air.
Yeah.
What can people do? They can actually join Veterans for Peace if they're not a veteran. They could actually join as associate members. They could also do that with Iraq Veterans Against the War. They can contribute $20. The most important thing you can do is get the T-shirt or the bumper sticker. and wear the damn thing. Wear the proud support. If you're not a veteran, wear the proud supporter of T-shirt of Veterans for Peace. And what that does is when somebody sees you wearing that, that allows someone else to come out, you see?
Yeah.
And it also tells the people, you know, of the organization. These are things, yeah, you can send a check, but if you're not, if you're in your community wearing this shirt or you have the bumper stickers from Veterans for Peace and they have the website on it, you slap the bumper sticker on the car. My girlfriend Kathy was in the Dunkin' Donuts coffee line. She has both a code pink bumper sticker and the white Veterans for Peace. It doesn't mean you have to be a veteran to have the bumper sticker on. And the woman behind her from the drive-thru saw the bumper sticker, said her son just got back from his third tour. This is horrible. How can I get involved with this group? She didn't even know about it. What is this Code Pink? What are these Veterans for Peace? You see, this is how people can take this feeling of shaken and shamed and moved and do something about it. I believe that feeling is given to us as a call to act.
Well, it is, and I mean, on my vehicle, there is a bumper sticker. It just says, "Support our troops, bring them home now." And yes, you'd be surprised what a simple statement like that will get you. I mean, I've gotten grief over it. You know, nobody's put a rock through a window or anything.
I understand, but this is being done in our name. And as far as helping these veterans, man, they're coming back. They don't have jobs. Even if they do, they can't keep them. You mentioned this guy's, and we just assume someone else is helping them. You know, these kids are showing up to the they're
deadly assumptions, Phil.
Hmm?
Deadly assumptions. Deadly assumptions.
Deadly assumptions?
Yeah, that we assume somebody else is helping them.
Exactly, and these kids need our help. I'm telling you, they you know, and I'm giving the listeners right now a way to actually, you know,
yeah,
specifically help these kids. Iraq Veterans Against the War, IVAW.org. And if you're not an Iraq veteran, you can be a supporting member. You can get their bumper sticker. And what that does is when you know, it says, "I support Iraq Veterans Against the War." And what that does is, you'd be surprised, man. We're demonstrating. It's the same four or five people every week on the corner. But you'd be surprised how many Iraq vets have come up to us. And it's tough for them, and they thank us. And one, you know, some nights we're just there, they have to get out, you know. And it allows them to come out. You offer them some safety. But as long as we just, to ourselves, man, we've got to be more constructive. And there are ways, and that's why I'm making this call in and specifically saying, please go to IVAW.org. And also veteransforpeace.org, and help these groups. There's only a handful of us yet in these different communities. You know, that those 18 Vets for Peace arrested up in Boston,
yeah,
you know, if there was 60, Bob, that might have been a whole different scene, man.
Sure.
Colorado and in California when these Iraq vets were you know, and you can be... People can actually show up with their Vets for Peace shirt and be an associate member and give these guys enough numbers to cross, you know, to break through this barrier, you know.
Yeah.
Say we support them, you know, and we can send a check in and we can click on an email, you know, petition or whatever, and but these guys need more direct support, and they need support with feet on the ground, body on the street, you know.
And they need to know that somewhere out there there are people, Phil, who when somebody says, you don't support troops, you want to end the war, that ain't supporting the troops, that there are people who will stand up and be and have guts enough to say, you know, bite me. They don't equate. It's not the same thing.
Right, but we got to be out there with them. So please, people, you know, Bob read this story tonight, and we've got a Congress, you know, that's totally owned by the military-industrial complex, and beholden to the Council on Foreign Relations. And folks, if you don't understand the relationship between these wars and the Council on Foreign Relations and how wide their tentacles go into our government in Washington, please Google it and do some research. The AIPAC, so we're really up against it, and all these kids have is us, and it's got to be, we got to get out there with them. They're out there naked, and it ain't going to change. It is in our name. You know, Bob, you know, this whole thing of a government of, for, and by the people, you know, self-governing, that's what's always made the United States of America, you know, different from the rest. We're self-governing, and these soldiers swear an oath, you know, and are willing to die to protect this Constitution, which allows us to be self-governing, and we've allowed them to be used, and we've allowed the Constitution to be totally destroyed. Because, and when I say we, Bob, I mean the American people as a whole. We, the people, have allowed, because we haven't participated, man. You know, we, the people, haven't participated. I'm talking as a whole, Bob.
I know. And the worst part of that story, and I really more or less left it alone, is the young man's marriage to his high school sweetheart falls apart.
Yes.
And it makes front page news there in his little, you know, local community. And yet, it would seem that, and I understand the ethics involved, and I understand some of the societal, cultural stuff involved. That's a front page story that this guy who was a photograph, his marriage is ending. He had to put out a press release asking people to please afford him and his ex-wife, soon-to-be ex-wife, a little bit of privacy and dignity.
Yes.
But they can't be bothered to ask why it is that that this happened. Now, on the other hand, beyond this story, oh my God, beyond this story, other stories, the story that broke, a week ago, Phil, that fully 26% of the homeless people in this country are veterans.
And it's been that way for many, many years.
Sure it has, and I remember...
It's
see,
even worse now, Bob.
I remember the Reagan administration, Phil. I'm sure you do as well.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the favorite things that people, the acolytes and the evil minions of people like Ronald Reagan used to say is, well, you know, the homeless people like to be homeless. They don't want a home. They want to live on the street because they're crazy. Do you remember that, Phil? I mean, I know it was said.
Yeah, I'm very, very familiar. I used to live in the city of Boston, and I worked in a homeless shelter, actually, 3 to 11, and was involved with the VA up there, too, in the 80s. That's what I'm trying to say, people. I'm offering a way where you can actually have more of an effect, Please go to these two websites, the
IAVW.org and veteransforpeace.org.
And here's something that just came out, and it's the Vietnam veterans, actually, I believe some of the fellas from the Gainesville chapter of Veterans Peace, who've been taking in a lot of these Iraq vets here in Florida, they're going to do the winter soldiers hearings for Iraq and Afghanistan veterans. And they just put out a press release, and they need people to support this. And that did a lot for you know, back in 71 when they had it up in Detroit with the Vietnam veterans, and John Kerry was there, you know, Winter Soldier, you can Google it and order the DVD or sign it out from your public library.
Well, I think what you've suggested is good and valid, Phil.
Yes.
IAVW.org.
Yes.
And VeteransForPeace.org.
Yes. And would join them. Order the T-shirt and wear it. Order the hat and wear it in public. Let them see the emblem. Get the bumper sticker. You know, you don't have to be a veteran to slap
right,
on a
right.
white.
Absolutely.
You know, and this goes a long way. I believe the Iraq Veterans Against the War have a bumper sticker that says, "I support Iraq Veterans Against the War." There's a lot of Iraq vets that don't even know this until they see it back
sure.
home.
Sure. It's a function of isolation, either deliberately imposed or just counted on. Yeah. Well, Phil, thanks a lot.
Yeah.
I've got another call I've got to take here, but those are both websites people should absolutely go to, participate in, and, stand up with. Stand with, above all. Phil,
stand
thanks
with.
A lot.
Great. Show up, and thanks so much, Bob.
Take care now.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And let's talk to Bob in North Dakota. You there, Bob?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Great. How you doing?
No, I'm just wondering what value we veterans really have. I gotta ask that question. What value does this nation put on anyone that's willing to serve to put their life on the line for it? What value do we have? Very little.
Well, it's something that we're much better talking about than doing anything about, Bob.
I know. I don't know how to address the problem. The problem is it's internal. I live with it every day, Bob. Every day of my life, I have to get up and I have to find a reason to continue on. And I promise. Okay, I made a promise. Okay.
Yeah.
When I and my buddies, the ones of us that did leave Vietnam, we made a promise. We said every day from now on, it's going to be gravy because you're out of the NAM. You're out of the NAM, and you have to live for them. You have to give your all and do your best and stay alive and just survive. And remember, and just remember what they gave. Remember that they gave it all. And they gave their lives, and we bagged them and tagged them and sent them home. And nobody except us understands it. Those of us that were there. Now, I'm not asking you to feel what I feel or to think what I think. Or to understand it.
Well, you've got enough common sense, Bob, to know that most people can't. Not that they don't want to, they simply can't.
I know that. It's not that we want you to understand it. We want only this, that you respect us. Don't throw us out on the streets. And these kids now, you realize every day I get up, I have a roof over my head, and I have a home, and I think about those boys. Young girls and boys coming home that have been disrespected by their countrymen so much, Bob.
And let's not forget, Bob, by their own military.
The military doesn't care about you when you leave it. They care about you while you're there, and that's why they say we take care of our own. They take care of their own as long as you are active duty. They don't take care of you after active duty because you are not of their own. It's kind of like, very clannish. I mean, if you want to go back to the KKK and think about it, okay? They took care of their own as long as they were members of the KKK. But once they went to the FBI and started giving out the secrets of the KKK, exactly the way it is with the military, okay? Once you're out, you're out. But if you go out and you start, okay, like on that Jeff Ferrier show, he's got a guy that calls him, and he's a young veteran from Iraq. And he has so much to say, and so much that he is doing to try to turn the tide, to make it go back, and people to take a look. And he's out there fighting, but he's been so oppressed by this establishment and the, you know, even the military, they are part of the establishment. You got to realize that it's not. When you're in the military, you are the establishment. No. It's those that pull the purse strings and pull the, I don't know, puppet strings on these Democrats and these Republicans. Whoever does it, I have no idea. But I do know this, that once that you are outside of that cabal, okay, once you step outside of it, you are a lost soul. You might as well go live on the street as far as they're concerned, because you're not part of them anymore. And that's the way it is. We came home from the NAM, okay? And when we got here, we found people protesting the war. But we also found out that our parents, our family, had second thoughts about why they sent us there, and then they looked at us like we were strangers, and we were, because we had been somewhere that they could never go, but yet they sent us there, but they couldn't accept us back, because we had been changed. We had been changed beyond anything they could even comprehend, Bob.
More more so than people coming back from, say, the Second World War were changed. War does horrible things to the people who have to participate in it. That's why it should be entered into so hesitantly, if you will.
Absolutely.
But while there were horrors of those, and they were referenced in that email I began the program with, horrors that were imposed on people coming back from World War I and World War II, the response to it was somewhat different, was it not?
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
Because of the nature of the national commitment to it, that imposed a different response.
It did, and the thing is, Bob, you got to realize that in World War II, we were attacked. Okay?
Yeah.
In World War II, the United States of America was attacked by an outside force. We were attacked by the Japanese, and then the Germans declared war on us.
Correct.
And so, therefore, there was a national commitment, but, you know, the Vietnamese never attacked us, nor did the Iraqis. And I'm kind of questioning whether or not we were ever attacked by any Arabs. I mean, there's been no evidence to prove that we were ever attacked by an outside force. You know, there's no evidence. I mean,
that's the problem with it. It's the problem with this war in Iraq. It's not like we're fighting some other army in the field. We're not.
No, we're fighting against people that are fighting to save their homes, their families, their children, and after a while you've killed enough of them, blown up enough of their homes. Now they're just pissed, Bob. They want revenge, and they will get it. They will get it. And the whole of the Arab and the Arab speaking, and even now we're going after people that aren't Arabs, and you're talking about Iran? They're not Arabs, Bob.
No, they're not. They're not.
No. What are they?
Persians.
Who are they? You know, as a people, who are the people that live in Iran?
You've got a helicopter gunship incursion by the Turks into Iraq today.
I know.
With the Turkish Prime Minister declaring that it was done with the explicit complicity of the United States.
Absolutely. I'm sure it was. I'm sure the Bush said, go ahead and do it. I mean, no, you're not talking about the United States anymore. Bob, see, we are not a United States. We haven't been a United States for a long, long time. We are states in flux. We always are in flux. We're, you know, like, okay, we make jokes here in North Dakota about Montana and Minnesota. You want to know why it's so windy in North Dakota? Right now, we've got winds gusting somewhere around 60 to 75 miles an hour. Okay?
Wow, you're kidding. Right now?
Right now, this instant, okay? That's probably why my internet keeps popping in and out, because the wind is so strong. It's just, but you know why it's so windy in North Dakota?
Why is that?
Well, Montana blows and Minnesota sucks.
Ba-dum-bum.
See? That's the jokes you tell about your sister and your neighboring states, okay?
Sure.
And I'm sure West Virginia has a couple about old Virginia.
Yeah, well, we got that, and we got the ones we tell on ourselves.
Yeah, okay. See, that's how it goes. We are not a United States. We're not the kind of state that say, okay, that state over there is the same as us, and we are kin. But you know what, Bob Kincaid? Down there in West Virginia, and Bob, old Gutty Bob up here in North Dakota, you know what we are, you and I? Your family and the families I've met on the Head On Radio Network, we are family.
Yeah.
We are. We have made ourselves connected. And we are the United States. We're united in our hearts. We're united in our minds. We're united in our fight against this repressive, right-wing, neo-Nazi, fascist state. Okay, we are united against that, and that makes us.
But you make a very good point, and you remind me of something that sort of crossed my mind the other day, and I guess it makes me a bit of a jerk. But you know, after talking about the mountaintop removal stuff yesterday evening, Bob,
that was beautiful. I loved it.
I
thought it was great.
I was reminded later on because of one of the reruns. I was thinking about one of the reruns. It was from Joe's show when he was talking about the governor of Georgia, Sonny Perdue, saying, we'll pray for rain, hot diggity, because, you know, they're having a drought. And, you know, Atlanta's drying up.
Yep.
And you talk about us being disunited or in a state of dysfunction. It's very true, and it was manifested in my own spirit, because for a moment there I thought, you poor babies. You know, I didn't hear Sonny Perdue the howling about my friends whose wells have been destroyed by the blasting to get at the coal that fuels Sonny Perdue's stinking air conditioning in Georgia. You know, screw you, Sonny Perdue.
Isn't that true?
I mean, it shows me up for the jerk that I am, but that really did cross my mind. And frankly, if Georgia wants water, maybe they ought to look a little bit to the north, to the very sources of the water that flows through the Appalachian Mountains. It ain't always about rain, Bob.
No, it isn't.
Sometimes it's about the water in the ground.
That's right. And Bob, you hit the nail on the head. We're all connected. It's kind of like I was watching this program the other day on one of these Discovery Channel or something, and they were talking about how the Earth was formed, how it came to be the Earth that we live on, okay? And I was watching that program, and you know, everything that you see and everything that we are, everything as human beings, we all come from that stuff, from that primordial ooze. We all come from that point where...
Carl Sagan said we are made of star stuff.
That's it. We come from the stars. We come from stardust. We are all of the same material. When you break it down to the very, very essence of what being is. But unfortunately, and I mean this unfortunately, we as Homo sapiens have progressed to a point in our existence where we stopped being part of the universe and thinking we are the universe. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We're not accepting accepting ourselves as being a piece of anything. It's all about me, Bob. See what I'm saying? It's all about moi. You know, it's all about, okay, this guy. Nobody else matters. It's all about me. And that's where the human race has got. We don't think about ourselves as being a part of a greater whole, which is these United States and this little marble, this little blue marble, or not even that, this little speck of space dust floating around in the universe. We don't think of ourselves that way. We think that we are the only sentient being in the universe, and the universe is vast, Bob, vast beyond our even our comprehension of how far and how deep and how wide this universe is, and we can't get past the point that...
Well, it's because we can't get past that point, Bob, that we wind up in the messes we're in.
Well,
it's this notion that, and the quote from Carl Sagan again, if you go and you Google pale blue dot, you'll see it. But he says, you know, look at that little speck. Every general who ever dreamed of winning wars, every person who ever dreamed of ruling the world, was dreaming of ruling that little bit of nothing.
There you go. And see, now we have to get beyond that. And I think in this progressive movement, okay, and I mean progressive, because, Bob, we got to get past thinking Democrat and Republican. We got to get past that and think about progress. Progress of race, progress of our own souls, if you believe that we have a soul. Progress is progress. It's getting beyond what you thought you used to know, and just stop. Just stop at that wall and then step over it. Look beyond it and see, what are we leaving? What have I done to improve it? And, you know, I don't know any answers. I'm kind of like Mike Malloy. I'm full of a lot of questions.
I think that's all any of us have.
I have the question.
And if somebody's out there giving you hard and fast answers, you can just about bet, Bob, that you're being conned. Because if somebody, it's what I mentioned with Mark Levine at during his show, the W.C. Fields rule. You can't cheat an honest man. And an honest man is going to be honest enough with himself and with his universe to realize that there are no pat answers. And if somebody comes along offering you a pat answer and you accept them, he's dishonest and so are you, because you should have known better, and you're being taken advantage of because of your own, and I don't mean yours, you know what I mean, but because of our own willingness to be conned.
Exactly what you're saying, Bob, because this is what it boils down to thine own self be true. If you can look yourself in the mirror and know that you're being true to yourself, not to the other guy, but to yourself, and you're looking in that mirror and say, okay, is there a God? I don't know, but I'm not betting there isn't a God either. It's kind of like, you know, you kind of hedge your bet. But you got to look at the guy in the mirror and say, are you absolutely certain that there is or there isn't? And you have to weigh the cost, okay? And then you get to this point where you say, I cannot believe what I've been told or taught. I can only believe that which is a fact, and I can prove it, okay? If I can prove it one way or the other, I cannot prove that that you or I exist, other than that I'm speaking to you via this magical kind of a thing that's called a telephone, and I'm talking to I don't know, thousands of people, I think,
yes,
millions, who may be asking themselves that same sentient question: am I real? Okay, do I exist? And therefore, why am I here? And what is my purpose? And my purpose, Bob, and I believe yours too, because you created this beautiful head-on secure network, and you've made it grow, and you've done it with your blood, your sweat, your tears, and you've laid everything on the line for it. But you know what? You did it for one thing, Bob. That perfect set. That one thing. love your fellow man. You love this universe you live in. You love this little blue marble that you float around on in space, this spaceship Earth, and you love it enough to lay down your life, your wealth, everything. You are willing to give it up to try to save this little blue marble. And that, for that, I salute you. And you should salute me. I salute you because you're willing to fight for it. And that's what I love about you, Bob.
Well, thank you, Bob.
It's a
humbling experience, but you know what? It's also an inspiring one, and I thank you for your words. I got somebody blinking on hold here, though, so I'm going to roll along.
Hey, good luck. What is that old boy back in the day said? He said, "Good night and good luck."
Yeah, exactly.
Well, good night and good luck to us all. Love
indeed,
you.
Indeed.
Love the show and love your family.
Take care, thanks. Bob. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And I'm trying to be a good host, and I'm going to take a brief break and then come back and go right to the phones. I promise you that. You know the phone number, of course, 304-658-5453 or 877-443-2366. Yeah, either way, get you in. Email comes into bob@headonradio.com. Doing too many things at one time. This is listener-supported independent radio. This is The Horn. We'll be back.
This morning, I suddenly realized we're all in this together. I started smiling, 'cause you were smiling, and we're all in this together. I'm made of atoms. You're made of atoms, and we're all in this together. And long division just doesn't matter, 'cause we're all in this together. Yeah.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at headonradionetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
Headonradionetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to The Horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at headonradionetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
This is the Head On Radio Network. The Horn.
This is Billy Shears. Join us this Thursday on Foxed Up at its new time, 12 midnight, following nighttime Cup of Joe. We'll take a look at the King, Elvis Presley.
The first car I ever bought was the most beautiful car I've ever seen. It was secondhand, but I parked it outside of my hotel the day I got it and sat up all night just looking at it.
Be there this Thursday on Foxed Up at his new time, 12 midnight, right here on the Head On Radio Network, and find out what happened to that car.
I say, oh, meet me in a hurry behind the bar. Don't you be afraid, and I'll do you no harm. I want you to bring along my rocking shoes, 'cause tonight I'm going to rock away.
This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path? One that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way? Or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580. Or go to peacecorps.gov.
I've traveled all around the world, and there are places that still stand out to me. None can really quite compare to my island in the sea. My personal utopia, a place to run to, where I can hide away, where I can truly rest me, somewhere fresh and clean, where a man can dream. I'm king, king of somewhere high.
Yeah, trying to go to the happy place. Thank you, Jimmy. It's about this time of year when the sky turns all gray and it gets a little ooky. I mean, it was warm here today, but you start thinking about that, you know, island in the sun. I don't know, maybe I'll get some of it vicariously when I hear back from horn psychologist Rick Goodner, who is, I don't know if he's back yet or not. But he was doing a little vacation time, as you may have heard, on Rick's place over the weekend. And he was going to go and, you know, look at the fishes, going diving out down around Cozumel. And I hear that's just drop-dead beautiful. So we'll wait for Rick's vacation report at some point in time. You know, we all need a break like that. God knows Rick has. Bless his heart. And I hope he comes back fresh and relaxed and raring to go and really cranks up a good one for us this weekend. Of course, they're all good. The weekend schedule on the Horn is quite wonderful these days and growing by leaps and bounds. We had our first installment of the Sowards Report this last weekend. Gosh, I hope you heard it. It was amazing. Right out of the blocks, and there's Matt Sowards and his crew kicking butt and taking names. And of course, as I said, Rick Goodner in Rick's place, always thought provoking, always sufficient to give you something to think about on the weekend. And of course, both of those programs run in rotation around Night Sounds with Billy Shears that comes your way the first time at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Saturday night, and then rotates through Sunday with Rick's Place and the Sowards Report. So I hope you'll check out the weekend schedule on the Horn. We're trying to grow for all. It amazes me. It just amazes me. Let's go back to the phones. We're joined by our good friend Susan calling from Columbia City, Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
How are you?
Hanging in.
Gotta.
Got a couple of goodies for you. First of all, on what Phil was saying. When you get the t-shirt, don't just wear it at your local anti-war protest.
Wear it to the grocery store. Wear it at the gas pump.
Wear it to the next VFW or American Legion meeting.
Yep, wear it to
wear
church.
Wear your next trip to the VA.
Yeah.
Guess what? You'll be surprised at what you hear. It won't be how, you know, it won't be, you won't be called a traitor as often as you think. I found that out myself.
Mm-hmm.
Surprised. Another thing. My husband saw combat in both World War II and Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And I can pretty much guarantee that if you have been in combat, I don't care what war, you're going to experience PTSD.
At some level.
At some level. How that affects you, how you handle it, that varies from day to day. But I can tell you this right now. My husband, after all these years, is now starting to experience symptoms of PTSD.
God.
Yeah.
And of course, and like I tried to get or somehow make clear, and I always wonder if I'm doing it in talking with Phil, and I don't mean because it's Phil, I mean because I always wonder about my own communication skills. It's how the society, how the culture, how the nation, in turn, responds.
Right. Okay, as far as the Vietnam veterans and the Iraqi veterans, a whole bunch of my friends, they're all calling that Black Wall in Washington, D.C. And have you ever heard of a Dixie Chicks song called Traveling Soldier?
Mm-hmm. We've played it, I believe.
Yeah. Periodically, on a regular basis, I go in and I rip the scab off of Vietnam deliberately by playing that song. Because I knew girls who ended up more or less like that girl in the song Under the Bleacher Crying.
Yeah, and the Blake Miller story. The part I left out some of the more salacious details, but he did. He married his high school sweetheart in a civil ceremony at Camp Lejeune, and after disappearing and being gone for several days, she finally caught up with him going down the road in his truck or whatever, with a girl by his side.
Yeah.
And that was the day that he told her that he'd already filed for a divorce.
Yeah. And the reason I do that is because I can't allow myself to forget. I won't allow myself to forget. So anytime I think that scab's getting a little bit too thick, I rip the sucker off.
Yeah, just by and remembering by letting it stay raw.
Yeah, because not remembering would be a crime.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mentioned that Veterans Memorial downtown, this little hamlet that we live near. And they've got the names of veterans from the Civil War forward. And if you just give your mind a moment to try to imagine those people, it's the most that we can do for the ones who are gone now.
Yeah.
And it is only right and it is only decent that we should do so.
And I have to admit, okay, the VA here in Portland is fairly good.
Well, the VA people do the best, in large part, Susan, the VA people do the best they can with the limited resources they are afforded.
Yeah, within their limitations. But the thing is, what do you do when you have somebody who is, you know, the system's rigged? A lot of these veterans from World War II and Korea, they get this cute little denial letter back that says, oh, we can't cover this because we don't have your records. They were destroyed in a fire. Now, yes, indeed, there was a fire. But
there was a fire, and it was what? Was that the St. Louis Records Center?
Yeah.
I ran across that when I was trying to find my Uncle Fred's records, and they were destroyed in that fire.
But I get the feeling they use that as an excuse to cover a whole lot.
Yeah, that... that fire would have raged across the entire Midwest to have, yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, and, you know,
gets bigger every time somebody needs services.
Right. I've got a husband who's deaf, partially deaf, because of what was known as Operation Thunderbolt in Korea. He was right up next to several miles worth of long toms
mm-hmm.
that all of a sudden cut loose for 24 hours straight, and he was sleeping about 100 yards away. Oops.
Yeah.
Guess what? That pretty much wiped out his hearing on that side. The VA says, oh, we don't have any record of you being anywhere near that battle. Sorry. Can't do anything. God, I love it.
Yeah, well, not so much, huh?
No. And it just... It's not the VA system itself. It's the way the government has stacked the deck. The VA does wonders with what they have.
Yeah, they do. And it's the crime is what they don't have to do with.
Yes, exactly. And if they were given half a chance, these people, these veterans, would be taken care of. And that means they wouldn't be living under bridges. And they wouldn't be being...
And 25% of the homeless population wouldn't be veterans.
Yeah, being preyed... And because they've got severe PTSD, they're being preyed on by every kind of lowlife you want to imagine.
Yeah.
And damn it, it's wrong. And that's why I keep ripping that scab off. Because as long as that scab keeps getting ripped off, I know that I'm going to keep screaming about it.
As well you should. As well you should.
And one more thing to give. Did the Iraq veterans doing the R and the VA and the... Actually, most of the Vietnam veterans didn't really get... They never really got a GI Bill. The Iraq veterans, they're not even going to get even a shadow of one. And it's not fair.
No, it isn't fair. It is, however, business as usual and politics as the norm in an America that is more concerned with the free market.
Yeah, but that...
Than with those who GI go and Bill, fight and do the free market's bidding.
Yeah, that GI Bill fueled more of American success than almost anything this country ever did. Because it sent all of those GIs to school, and they took the American economy and just revved it into overdrive.
Sure they did. Sure they did. It's, you know, and the thing is, it comes back to that question that Phil mentioned, you know, what can we do? What can we do? What can we do? It is the eternal question with all of these horrors. I don't care whether it's Veterans Affairs, whether it is environmental issues, whether it's issues of human rights, any issue, it always boils down to what do we do about it? Do we sit around and talk? Do we feel that, you know, if for some reason I am providing an outlet for people
mm-hmm.
with this program whereby they can say, well, you know, we've griped about it for 3 hours. Now we're free to not do anything about it. You know, I might as well turn the lights off.
Yeah.
Because that is not what this exists for. We talk about it, we express our frustrations, but
doing something.
Well, and the other part of that is that we also apply our collective energies to finding solutions. And a classic example being last night when John Fox came on talking about industrial hemp, and suddenly the light bulb went on for Nanette.
Yep.
Wondering if something like that that will grow in practically, you know, nothing, grow it on Mars.
I'm pretty sure it will grow there because I've seen wild marijuana plants growing in Idaho on what amounts to a half an inch of topsoil over basalt.
So, you know, and that's, you know, that is this network doing this network's job.
And, you know, that, you know, if it'll grow in Idaho, it'll grow anywhere.
Well, but potatoes grow in Idaho. No. I'm being a moron. Susan, thank you so much, dear.
Okay, there's one other thing I wanted to mention.
Okay.
If you have, you know, I just got an email from Howard Dean's office about, you know, funding the Democrats. I sent him back an email saying, my money is being sent to fund primary challenges to traitors like Pelosi and her ilk. And I put down all of the names of the people I consider traitors, starting with my junior senator.
Oh, Wyden?
No.
No, Smith. Bob Smith. Not, what's his
name? Smith.
Gordon Smith, is it?
Yeah, he voted to confirm Mukasey.
Right.
This.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Anyway.
Take care, Susan.
Shinmore, could you try that?
Yes, indeed. Will do. Have a good night.
Love to Agnes.
And back to Donald. Bye now.
Bye.
Well, I'm doing pretty good, sort of staying on track, and yeah, yay, you know, yay me, I guess. We'll be back after the news. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
By 20 hounds. Didn't get to sleep that night till the morning came around. Sit out running, but I take my time. A friend of the devil is a friend of mine. I get home before daylight, just might get some sleep tonight. Ran into the devil, baby, and only 20 bills. Spent the night in Utah in a cave up in the hills. Get out and run, but I take my time. A friend of the devil is a friend of mine. I get home before daylight, just might get some sleep tonight.
This is the Quality News Network. In Washington, D.C., the U.S. Justice Department will take a new look at a dormant inquiry into the federal warrantless wiretap program. Rekindling of the investigation indicates a major shift in policy just days after new Attorney General Michael Mukasey took office. Investigators were denied security clearance last year, forcing the inquiry to be shelved. $1.6 trillion is the cost a Democratic committee has put on the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. A report released today includes so-called hidden costs, like long-term health care for veterans and interest payments on money borrowed to fight the war. The U.S. military is pulling 3,000 soldiers out of the Diyala province, taking the edge off of last summer's controversial 30,000 troop increase. Most of the brigade will be home by Christmas. Four Turkish soldiers were killed in battles with Kurdistan Workers' Party guerrillas as Turkey sent special forces to the region bordering northern Iraq. Turkish officials have threatened an incursion into northern Iraq to root out rebels using the mountains as a base for further border attacks. Two people were killed, 10 injured, when a bomb exploded at the Philippines House of Representatives. The blast killed Congressman Wahab Akbar, who reportedly had ties to an Islamic extremist group. Iran is handing over a set of blueprints showing how to mold uranium metal into the shape of warheads. The release of the documents meets a key demand of the UN nuclear agency. While an upcoming UN report may say that Iran is cooperating, it may not be enough to stop the call for a third set of UN sanctions against that country. South Korea is asking the U.S., China, and North Korea to begin negotiations aimed at producing an official peace treaty to replace the armistice ending the Korean War 5 decades ago. Israeli President Shimon Peres and Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas are both in agreement that the upcoming Middle Eastern peace conference is an historic opportunity and that failing to reach agreement would mean more trouble for that region. The conference is set for Annapolis, Maryland, later this year. And Pakistani police rounding up supporters of former Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto, throwing them in jail, saying they're violating the government's ban on public gatherings. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We'll take a look at science and business news just ahead.
Civility takes an effort. It requires that people remember that relationships need our attention. Whether we are talking about our most important personal relationships, how we get along with our colleagues, or the way we interact with strangers, it is what we contribute that defines the results. Even when the other people are not prepared to give their best selves, what we put in determines what we get out. Ralph Waldo Emerson suggested, "We must be as courteous to a man as we are to a picture, which we are willing to give the advantage of a good light. This is the essence of civility. When we are civil to strangers, when we defer at the intersection instead of racing out ahead, when we hold the door for someone we don't know, when we smile at someone who catches our eye, we declare our choice for a civilized society." For more information, click on the Civility button on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com.
The world's smallest bear faces extinction. Poaching and deforestation in its southeastern Asian home put the sun bear in the vulnerable category by the World Conservation Union. An estimated 10,000 sun bears remain on Earth, their habitat stretching from India to Indonesia. In business, President Bush vetoed legislation which would fund job training, education, and health programs. It is the sixth veto of his administration and the latest in a battle with Democratic Congress over domestic spending. Mr. Bush says the current U.S. economy remains strong despite taking some recent hits. He cited higher oil prices and a sagging housing market during a TV interview on Fox Business News this morning. Mr. Bush says he expects the U.S. dollar to, quote, rise on the back of a resilient economy. The nation's biggest retailer, Walmart, announcing third-quarter profit rising almost 8%, beating estimates. International sales also increased 17%. Company raised its full-year outlook heading into the holidays. Bank of America will take a $3 billion write-down in the fourth quarter, warning its losses could eventually be even worse. Light sweet crude oil trading at $91.17 a barrel. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow way up 319 points to end at 13,307. NASDAQ up 89 points. S&P 500 also up 41. More at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Okay, so we've got about, 50 minutes or so of lively conversation remaining to us in this edition of Head On. A couple of lights blinking on the phone. And we'll go straight away to the phones. Kevin is calling from New York. More properly, that would be Kevin calling from Brooklyn, wouldn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. But, yeah, how's everything, my friend?
Well, you know, we're muddling through, you know, another day in paradise.
You know, what I wanted to bring up is that how many marriages have been destroyed as a result of the policies this administration...
Oh, you mean the pro-family policies?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oodles? I mean, I know that's a technical term, but oodles?
Yeah, you know, it's like, you know, and unfortunately mine too, you know. It's, you know, on a personal note, my wife and I have decided to pack in the towel on it and, you know, go our separate ways.
Oh, man, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, well, you know, it's life, and it's, you know, we've tried. It's not because there's a lack of love or anything, but it's just, you know, this national, how would I say it, this national division is in our bedrooms, Bob. It's also in our bedrooms. It's in our living rooms. It's in our bedrooms.
Yeah, 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 okay. Yeah, I see what you're saying, sure.
It's at our dinner tables on Thanksgiving.
Oh, there are people in this audience, Kevin, who are openly dreading Thanksgiving Day right now.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I've seen it in emails, I've heard it in phone calls, because it's a matter of family that, and there's a tension in the room.
Exactly. So, you know, it's not like the, you know, this divide, it's in our homes. It's not even out in the town square.
Yeah.
For lack of a better, it's inside our homes. And, you know, when you're close to someone who, you know, I don't want to say, you know, who so, I don't know. I guess it's been almost like a religion, that so-called American dream, and what it's costing us as a country. You know, you just don't understand. And I think part of it is that they don't know any other way. They don't want to learn another way, and they're comfortable. You know, it goes back to that word, and I'm sorry to say it, and I'm sorry to say it about my ex, willful ignorance.
You know, Kevin, I think I keep talking about things like isolation and whether it's real, and loneliness, and what it does to people, and how we try to battle, you know, by creating this network, we try to battle that isolation. We try to, you know, take arms against feelings of hopelessness and being separated. And I'm grateful for it. On my end of this, I'm grateful for it. I'm grateful for all the people all over the country who let me know that, you know, it's not just me. And toward that end, we're learning some hard lessons. And I'm not speaking directly to you or your particular situation, but America is learning some hard lessons, because there are some things that the television just can't get you through. A television can't raise a child. A television cannot save a marriage. A television cannot relieve the aching loneliness of people who live by themselves in the latter years of their lives. We've got to have human contact, and we've got to be able to talk honestly with one another. We don't do that. Hence the stressing out of a lot of people that I know about the upcoming holiday season.
Oh yeah, and you know, going back, because a couple earlier today, you did the Guy James show with the, where he was talking about the televangelists.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you, they have done such, ripped a new one into this country, because one of the issues was in our marriage is that I think, especially Joyce Myers, oh God, the woman looks like she belongs in one of those.
Oh, I mentioned her. I guess it was last Wednesday night, Kevin, and I, bless his heart,
yeah.
Peter Godbold called in and just gave me a primer that probably I'm psychically scarred by.
Oh, yeah, and he hit it right on the head. You know, I could picture her in one of those all-female leather scenes, if you know what I mean. And I think it's going to be revealed, you know, eventually that she's into that scene. You know, but there's just such a lot of self-loathing in that community, which I don't get, and a lot of guilt and self-loathing. It amazes me. It really does. And I am so turned off by it. It's, you know, don't get me wrong. I still believe in God and all, and that's, but I go to the source, and I have my own definition.
Well, I've come to the conclusion that the biggest impediment to believing in something that we sort of just for shorthand called God is participating in an organized religion. I just looked at and got rid of a story where Creflo Dollar, and you know, he's one of those who was made inquiry of by Senator Grassley. Creflo Dollar said, "Well, sure, we had $69 million last year. But you know what? I don't take any income from my church. All my income comes from real estate investments." Yeah, that's the ticket, real estate.
Yeah. And you ever seen his entourage? It'll make Led Zeppelin tours in the 70s look like, you know.
Well, he makes the Pope look like the unpopular kid.
Yeah, you know. God, and people are falling.
And to stand up there in the pulpit and say, "I am rich, rich beyond your wildest dreams, because God loves me that much. And if you'll just give more money to me and make me richer, God will love you a little bit too."
Yeah, and you know, people are falling. And the thing is, educated people, not just.
Well, at that point, aren't you engaged in full scale, full on, no questions about it, idolatry, Kevin? And aren't you just worshiping the daggum money?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, when you try to explain that to certain people, they, you know, because at the end of the day, I've even said, you know, these are just probably MBAs selling God. Instead of selling you know, stocks, bonds.
Tickets out, imaginary tickets out of hell and into heaven.
Exactly.
I mean, I bless his heart, I wish Bishop Peterson had come rolling through West Virginia. I'd drive 150 miles to go see that man. You know, just it was just amazing to me. Well, obviously, I'm still talking about it.
And I you know, it's just really, I just am worn out. I'm worn out by, you know, and you and I have talked about it, Mid-America. And this is why I've come back to New York, where there's a lot of layers between that scene and me.
Yeah.
You know, I need to go where I am mentally and spiritually healthy, and this is it. You know, this and maybe Miami, South Beach.
<You know>? Oh, stop it! That's not mental health. That's self indulgence, Kevin.
Well, that too, but you know, it's just that's where I'm at at this point. You know, after all what's said and done, and it's like, already, in spite of all the negativity, things are working out for me. You know, my paperwork for me being a New York City public school teacher is rolling through. You know, and I'm just looking forward. You know, I just want to put whatever I need to do to...
And when you get bored, you can ride your bicycle in your basement.
Yeah, or just go outside and walk and talk to my neighbors. You know, when I was in Florida, only one set of neighbors ever talked to us. The rest of the block, no. And, you know, this is Mid-America. This is supposedly where family values and we care for one another.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. You know, I grew up in the inner city, the so-called evil inner city, and there's more interaction.
There's more community.
Yeah. And it's nothing like it, you know, and you don't have to drive 3 miles to get it.
True, and you know, I mean, I suppose, are you in a part of Brooklyn that's experienced this, or I don't know, what are they calling it, the Renaissance or whatever?
Yeah, the regentrification. Oh yeah, it's big time. And you know what's so funny about it is that you have people from the Midwest who are coming here to live, buying out a lot of these places and renovating them and living in them, because they're saying, you know, they just can't get it out in the Midwest or in the South or in other cities. Granted, most of them are artists, people who would not...
Yeah, if I can make it there, I'll make it anywhere, and this is the part where we start singing, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, because when I was out in Minnesota over the summer, I said I know a couple who lives on my block is from Minnesota and moved onto my block, and they're like, why would they want to move there? And I'm like, well, they're artists, one thing, and, you know, there's very little, I don't, from what I've seen, and not to down Minnesota or anything, but I don't think there's enough, going through downtown Minnesota, it's a very, downtown Minneapolis, it's kind of a very scary thing in the sense that downtown, there isn't there anymore.
Well, what is it? I read an article a while back about a similar statement, only more so, about Detroit.
Detroit, Orlando, most major cities, there's, if you go to their downtown, their so-called downtown during the afternoon, if you see another human being on foot, you're lucky. You'll see the cars driving by.
Yeah.
Because a lot of other cities, they have these so-called office parks.
Right, where they've moved out of the... Yeah, exactly. I mean, I know what it was. I had a conversation with Joe Bajant, as a matter of fact, and it was just off-air, and we were talking about it, about Detroit. There are places that it's literally becoming like some sort of ancient ruin.
Yeah, like that Will Smith movie that's about to come out.
Yeah.
You know, you honestly think a neutron bomb or there was a poison gas attack or whatever, and all humanity died off. And that's a very scary feeling.
It is. And as was pointed out, it was on Peter Godbold's Strictly Confidential the other night when he was talking to the gentleman from the school board there in Birmingham. He said, the thing is, if we allow our inner city to die, he said, they don't realize it right now, but the suburbs cannot survive on their own.
No, they cannot.
The suburbs don't have anything.
Yeah, they don't. You know, New York, when you look about it, New York City, part of the reason why it's referred to as the Empire State, but particularly the city, is because New York money has built at least five other cities in this country. If it wasn't for New York money, Miami would still be a stop town on the way to Havana.
Yeah.
Las Vegas would not have been built. Los Angeles would not have been built. And Phoenix and Tucson would not have been built up to where they are.
That smacks of being incredibly true.
Okay, because the biggest real estate developers were former New Yorkers. Not to mention this whole northeastern corridor. You know, Boston is a bit independent on its own, but it's such a...
Yeah, and Chicago's its own place, San Francisco's its own place, Seattle's its own place. These places all have their own character. St. Louis, Kansas City, Dallas. But what you just... That makes eminently good sense. Well, I'll tell you what, Kevin, there's got to be a lot of stuff running around in your head and your heart, and I'm glad to hear it. It sounds like you're dealing with it in a very healthy fashion, and I only hope that you can continue. I want good things to happen in terms of you going out and trying that new career, because I got a feeling you'll be pretty good in front of a classroom full of kids.
Oh, yeah, I hope so. I really do, and, you know, I'm just looking forward. I'm looking forward to the future. You know, this was what it was, and, you know, my soon-to-be ex, you know, she's a great, beautiful, enchanting woman. It's just, I think we got into a situation which was beyond us, and it affected us. And, you know, this is the reality of the Bush era. This is, you know, the economic reality.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is.
And, you know, it has broken up so many families, military, non-military, semi-detached military. And, you know, and this is the so-called family values.
Yeah, that's the best part of it.
Yeah.
Well, Kevin, hang in there, my friend. Take care and stay in touch, will you?
I will. I definitely will. Okay, Bob. Talk to you soon.
Bye now.
Bye.
Now, the, Kevin telling the story the other night of when he was a kid in the home that he grew up in there. The basement big enough that on rainy days they'd ride their bicycles in the basement. I've still got that mental image, and I just kind of love it. Let's keep it rolling. Michelle is calling from Southern California. Hey, Michelle, welcome aboard.
Hey, kiddo.
How are you?
I'm surviving.
are we still clean? Are we still smoke free?
I'm still clean. I just ate a whole what would you call it? A bunch of celery.
You know, that's fiber. That's mostly water. I don't think it's gonna hurt. Now, if it was if it was larded down with the cream cheese or peanut butter, there might be issues.
Yeah. No, I did have that Moo Cow, whatever. It's low fat because the other half is like, well, we gained so much. Well, he was saying this about himself because, you know, he'd be dead if he said that about me. that we started the South Beach again, so. You know, I'm going to monitor myself on the time because my youngest is at karate, and I was told if I wasn't there on time to pick her up that, you know, I would hear major ranting.
Yeah, that you...
about 5 minutes to talk at you guys, and, you know, it was Kevin, correct?
From yes.
Back east. You know, the one thing I got to say to him is, being in a relationship is damn hard. I mean, I didn't get into a marriage until I was 33. I played the ground until I was 33.
I waited until I was 30.
Marriage, man, it's hard. It's hard to perpetuate relationships. I mean, I have a hard time having a relationship with you. Now, Agnes is so much simpler, but...
Well, thanks a million, Michelle, okay? I mean, yeah. But I get it. I'm hard to live with, I know.
Well, you know, and And then, it's talking about how family, has been affected by this administration and the Congress, which is pretty fair statement. And then you have John Edwards coming out and making that statement about, when he gets into office, he's going to tell him either you give him health care, universal health care, or I'm taking yours away.
I love
you hear about that.
You remind me of something. Yeah, okay, this is the weird, possibly psychotic Bob segment of the program.
Okay. And
I don't dream about politicians. I'm a little disturbed to be announcing this. I had a dream about John Edwards last night.
Oh, and, I love it.
And here you are talking about that, and whoop, cue the Twilight Zone music.
Yeah. Ding, 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 ding. I know, I've been there. I think mine was self-induced.
There wasn't anything weird going on.
But you had some kind of conversation with him?
Yeah, we were sitting there talking.
Were you guys talking about hairstyles and...
No! It was more along the lines of, I really want you to stop beating around the bushes and get deadly serious about this stuff.
Well, then maybe he
My psyche thinks a lot more of me than I do.
Yeah. Good.
I think the show rubs off on me sometimes. That or the corned beef and cabbage I had for dinner the night before.
I was younger, I tried those mushroom things, and then I played a game of pitch. All night long we played pitch. And then I finally went to sleep and I dreamt about pitch. So don't be eating any funky mushrooms.
No, I'm retired.
Me too.
My poor little mind just can't go to those places anymore.
Well, it's just sad that... I've always wondered, how is it that they can have health care, Congress can have health care...
Because they're better than us.
For them.
They're our betters. Don't you know that?
If something happened to them, our nation wouldn't run. My ass.
Let's put it this way. You remember South Dakota Senator Tim Johnson that had the terrible brain troubles?
Right.
If that had happened to one of America's 47 million uninsured, that guy would be dead.
Right.
Senator Johnson, on the other hand, gets the best medical care available on planet Earth. There's a reason that we have, Supreme Court justices and senators that live to be 90-something. They are cared for like prize cattle.
It's like...
We give prize cattle better health care than we give 47 million Americans.
We do. They get antibiotics. Of course that.
Well, and that's how we get ours, I guess. It's trickle down bovine economics now. you remind me. I'm looking at it here. A couple of days ago, Bug Spray Huffin' Tom DeLay was in the UK.
Oh my God!
And he was giving a speech and warned that, if a Democrat gets to be president, they'll try to bring in universal health care. And the group that he was speaking to all applauded, because I assume this was some level of conservatives in Great Britain, but even they realized that, it's stupid not to have it.
Right.
And DeLay got kind of pissy and told the assembled group, by the way, there's no one denied health care in America. There are 47 million people who don't have health insurance, but no Americans denied health care in America. And they laughed at him. According to the fine folks at the Center for American Progress, thinkprogress.org, they note Texas resident Shirley Lowe was denied health care because her breast cancer was diagnosed at a medical center rather than a clinic receiving federal cancer research funds. New Orleans bus driver Emmanuel Wilson was denied health care when the government refused to pay for his chemotherapy because he had had a job that provided insurance, a job he lost after Katrina. And thousands of 9/11 workers who worked at Ground Zero were denied health care when the federal government approved woefully inadequate funds to address the to permanent health problems like sinusitis, asthma, and various and sundry other pulmonary and bronchial lung-related illnesses brought on by direct contact with the filth that happened when the buildings came down and were cleaned up. So, but that's okay, because Tom DeLay's a Republican, and he can, he was in the UK, and he expected to be treated the way he is in the United States, where a Republican can just get up and lie, and everybody goes, oh, okay, that's cool, nobody goes without health care in America, all right, got it. Jeez, you know?
Well, you know, now it hadn't, the crowd, the audience hadn't been sanitized.
Pre-screened for Tom's convenience.
So he doesn't get it sanitized like the rest of the administration and Congress does when they go somewhere. You know, let's sanitize the place. We don't want any outspoken, honest people to speak against us.
You remember when George Bush went to Germany or Austria or wherever it was and they had to set up a separate toilet system and catch his poop?
No, I didn't know that. Oh,
yes! God.
You made me snort.
Yay, 1 point for Bob.
Oh, my God.
I'm up a snort.
I gotta go, damn it.
All right.
I'm gonna listen to you guys. Keep it going.
All right. I don't want you catching hell from the youngest, okay?
Oh, my God. You know how it is.
You know, she may use one of those karate moves on you. You know.
You
don't want her getting all stork on you or anything.
No. She'll kick me upside the head, man. All right, guys.
All right.
Tell
later, Michelle.
In room 11, and I love you and Agnes.
All right. Love to you, too. Bye now.
Bye.
And I don't know who this is, but let's find out. Hey, who have I got?
Hi.
Hi,
this is Juanita.
Hey, Juanita, dear. How are you?
I'm fine. I've been listening to your show, and I just had to call in about the health situation. Well, my son had a procedure yesterday on his back.
Is he okay?
Well, he could be a lot better, I'll tell you why. He was supposed to have a TENS. The doctor wanted him to have one of those TENS things.
Sure.
So, his insurance hasn't decided whether he should have it yet or not. We don't know when they're going.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
So
and God forbid you should sue him to make that happen. You know, that would be lawsuit abuse.
That I don't think you can sue HMOs, can you?
No, you can't. We tried to get that, but...
but anyway, I told him, I said, well, you know, Bush said that if you didn't have insurance, just go to the emergency room. I said, maybe we should go and get you a TENS there. I'm sure they'll give you one.
Yeah, they got them stacked up by the wall, Juanita. They do. You know, you get one of those.
You have to laugh at some of this stuff, you know, to keep from...
Well, if it wasn't so confounded mean-spirited, you know, it's mean, these people. They're mean.
Of course. Of course they are. They got theirs and they... I tell you, I saw that speech where Edwards talked about that. I'd heard him talk about it before about if they don't let the people have the insurance, then they can do without theirs too. And
how many members of Congress do you think would pack up and go home if we took away all the fun benefits?
And they, he made a great speech. You know, at that fundraiser. I mean, it was. He was on fire. The one thing that teed me off, though, was Dennis Kucinich wasn't there. He wasn't invited to the fundraiser.
Oh, are you talking about the Iowa Jefferson Jackson
yeah.
Day dinner?
Mm-hmm.
They said that they didn't invite Gravel or Kucinich because they didn't have a state organization in place.
Yeah. And I think if I'm read right, I think Kucinich is going to Iowa. Sometime this week or next week.
I think Dennis has been focusing most of his efforts on New Hampshire.
But, you know, some of the things that Bush says is so far out, you know, that
well,
he has no comprehension, doesn't care to.
They're transmissions from Mars, Juanita. I mean, you got to have a translator anymore.
Yeah. But I got a kick out of you and that lady talking about.
No, bless her heart, Michelle.
And I said, you know, I just thought I'd put my little information.
Well, if I, you know, any
don't have to go to the emergency room and get his TENS.
heavens to Betsy.
You
know, maybe they've got them in the gumball machine there when you walk through the door.
Good idea. So he could be doing better if he had that, maybe. I don't know.
Well, any night that I can get Michelle to snort, I know I've done my job.
Oh.
Well,
you've just got such a great show. You know, I'm so
bless your heart.
Listening to you. And,
I'd
listened to Guy James for so long, you know, when he was at the other places and all. And
yeah. You go back to all the way back to when Guy was on old fashioned radio too, don't you? Over the air stuff.
Huh?
Back when he was doing over the air radio and doing Saturdays.
They kept kicking him out.
I know.
You know, they kept saying he wasn't conservative enough.
Oh, I know. Dangerous. Dangerous.
Yeah, but no, I didn't know him from way back. I don't know how I got to listen to him, but I started listening to him, and you know, it was before they had anything like Air America on or anything
right.
like that. And then he was off, you know, during the elections, and I think I would have just gone mad when we lost presidency then, you know, 2004. Because see, I'm from Florida, and I listened to all that stuff, you know, about Gore, and it was terrible. It was just awful. There were so many things that we had, you know, we had a Republican Congress, Senate and that. They kept threatening they were going to declare Bush the president. And you know Bush was going to go, he tried to get the Supreme Court right at the beginning. And I thought, well, why does he want us not to have a right to sue? You know, if he wants to go to the Supreme Court right off the bat. Well, they turned it down then. That's before we had all these trials and so forth down here. And I have a different outlook on about Gore giving up. If, you know, because I think if he'd have kept on, if he'd have got in the presidency, I really believe that he would have been totally destroyed by, you know, the unhating people on the side, you know.
Right, yeah.
We're so hateful.
We are. It's all just because we hate George Bush. That's
yeah,
all it
right,
is.
Right, right. I mean, can't think straight. Well, at least we don't worship him like they do.
That's true. The idea of being on, praying to George, not up for it. Can't do it.
Yeah. Well, did you know, I used to listen to Radio Left. I can't get them anymore for some reason. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
Jeff. And he said he believed that if Bush made love to a pig out in his front yard every week, that they would say that was some kind of new rite in the church. They'll be trying to do it.
I'm kind of there. I mean, this guy, no matter how low his poll numbers go, he gets away with it.
And there are people who seem to really worship him, I'm telling you. I just don't understand it. I've never understood it to begin with.
Well, at this point, they have to, Juanita, because, you see, they've got so much invested of their own belief system and the way their own weird little settlings between their ears that pass for brains actually work. That if they were to wake up and smell the coffee, it would call. They've invested so much of their own sense of self worth that they would call into question their own reason for being.
Yeah. Well, they better question it now instead of waiting. I know they won't. But.
Well, you know, Plato said that the unexamined life is not worth living. That says a lot about your average Bush supporter.
True. But you know, it's like they're coming at, you know, it's kind of like right is wrong and wrong is right. Like they're brainwashing people to.
Yeah, well, and they are brainwashed in their own right.
Torture is okay.
Torture's good. Day is night. Up is down. Black is white.
Right.
Yeah.
If it's the truth, if we think it's the truth, we're out of luck.
They live in a fantasy land, Juanita, where if they only believe it, it becomes true. It's the kind of stuff that kids ordinarily, and, you know, you've raised a child, you go through that phase, and long about 10 or 11 years old, they look up and they go, hey, wait, you know, I know things here, and it doesn't make it true just to believe it. And they're trapped in some sort of pre-adolescent fairy tale Tinkerbell world, these Bush supporters, these Republicans.
What is that?
Exactly. Juanita, so good to hear from you, and I really do hope your boy's okay. I hope he gets what he needs.
Yeah, thank you very much.
You have a wonderful evening.
And you too, Bob.
Bye now.
God bless you.
Bless you too. Our good friend Juanita calling from Florida. And I don't know who this is. Let's find out. Hey, who we got? Hello?
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 Bob, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
I can. That was really fast. This is Jesse.
Oh, hi, Jesse. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. This is Jesse International, the liberal jewelry guy.
Yes, I recognized your name immediately. I'm sitting here and... I've got your belt buckle and the necklace on display. We keep it back here by the door for when we go out.
Great. I don't usually call any radio shows, but a lot of stuff has gone on since I sent you this stuff, and I just wanted to call you because I did hear the night when you opened up the package and you seemed so happy.
Oh, I was tickled to death. It's so neat, Jesse, because the silver of the liberal necklace is so it's so beautiful, and it catches the light so well, such that every now and then I'll move in a certain direction, and maybe I've shaken the desk given a little shimmy to the desk that all the stuff equipment sits on, and the light will catch it, and it'll sparkle. And, you know, I'm kind of a simple person, Jesse, and, you know, things that sparkle catch my attention. You know, oh, a squirrel. You know, I'm an adult living with attention deficit disorder is what I am. But it is beautiful. I was thrilled, and I remain that way.
That's great. I've been meaning to call in this whole time. It's crazy. My wife and I, our home got broken into.
And oh, no.
The day after I heard the podcast of, you know, when you opened up the package and you seemed really grateful and happy, and I completely lit up. But anyway, it was so weird. We came home, and only 45 minutes out of the house, the entire house was turned over, and I thought,
oh my God,
Homeland Security, the Nazis are here. Like, I was totally freaked out, but I really don't know what happened, but I just wanted to call and say thank you for everything that you've been doing, and yeah.
Well, you know what, that warms my heart, Jesse. Is there any chance of, what did they steal? Is there any chance of you getting your stuff back, or...
Well, they stole a lot of jewelry. They stole our passports, and which freaks me out because now we've got to get the whole new passport thing with the magnetic strip and all that stuff, which I'm not happy about.
No, just consider yourself lucky that you don't have to get a biometric RFID chip in your wrist or something.
It's only a matter of time.
That's
right?
Coming. But, is insurance going to cover? You're a jeweler and an artist and stuff. That makes me wonder if they knew what you were up to, or, you know, knew what you were about, knew what you did. That just sucks.
Yeah, I don't really know. I mean, we actually rent. We're in North Hollywood, California, so everything is so expensive here.
Oh, I can only imagine.
So, I've only moved out here about 7 years ago. I'm from Philadelphia.
Yeah, you didn't exactly sound like a Southern California native, Jesse. I mean, I'm not gooning on you or anything, but there's a little East Coast wandering around in there somewhere.
And I didn't even say water.
No, well, now you have.
You want a glass? So what have you guys been talking about tonight?
You know, we've been all over the board. It was sort of a catch-up from Veterans Day. I got an email last night from a listener who was just disgusted by the fact that George Bush couldn't bother to show up for the ceremonies at Arlington. He sent Cheney instead. And there's been a lot of that. And generally, how we're treating our veterans, what we're doing with them. The homeless issue, you know, I'm looking at a statistic right now from this report that came out that's being talked about, you know, the true cost of the war. I'm looking at a headline from CNN right now, Jesse, that says war costs for a family of four $20,900.
How much? I'm sorry.
$20,900.
Yeah, I heard the $20,000 something earlier today.
I mean, does that just gag you? That's okay.
Unbelievable.
I know.
It's unbelievable. And people are still sleeping.
Yeah. And, you know, getting up, turning the TV on, having a high old time, dancing with the stars.
Yeah. But he did manage to do that thing with the place in Austin, the Intrepid. What was that place? The place that he went to.
Oh,
photo op, pretty much.
yeah, that's all it was. it amazes me. It amazes me what we're willing to put up with in this country.
Yeah,
and of course, you know, last night was our mountaintop removal night, and that is still weighing heavily on my mind. Let me ask you. I mean, you're out there in North Hollywood, Jesse. Is there a difference out there as compared to, say, down south, or, you know, up east, whatever? I mean, is there any more awareness there, or less of what a fix we're in, or is everybody just on cruise control across the country, do you think?
I mean, driving across town, it feels like everybody's on cruise control. I've never been down south, so I don't really know too much about down south, but.
But you're a musician too, and I mean, I assume that you.
As far as the East Coast goes, it's kind of similar. I mean, people seem more tolerant of that sort of thing. But
well, what about from the fires and stuff? I mean, is that just yesterday's news now?
To the people that live here in LA, pretty much, because it didn't really affect people here. It was San Diego and places that are a little bit out of reach. So when that happened, it looked like the end of the world. Even here, I mean, the skies were gray and pink and weird looking, but ultimately here, it's like, for the people here, it just seems like life goes on.
Well, it's. I mean, that's the story across the country. You know, we are given in the rest of the country, and you know this as well, Jesse. Of course, we're given this notion that California, in particular, well, California in general, and particularly pockets like L.A. and San Francisco, the Bay Area, that there are these raging pockets of just insane liberalism, where everybody's walking around singing Kumbaya and you know, wearing peace buttons. It really isn't that, though, is it? Everybody's wrapped up in their own lives, pretty much, aren't they?
They are, and you know, it's not like it is on TV. I mean, I'm a musician and a jewelry designer, and I've been at it for years, and it's been, the jewelry business worked out really well for a while, and it's gotten really slow in the last couple of years, and I've gone back to my construction roots. So
Oh, multi-talented. You do construction too?
Yeah, that's why I've never called in, really. I since, you know, I first found out about you, I've been back at construction, so I've listened to your podcast during the day while I'm working, and by the time I get home, it's too late to actually call in. So today, got done a little early, and I've been meaning to call you, and it's just been crazy here with the whole break-in and all this other stuff. So
that's just madness. Yeah, it's got to be.
Yeah.
Well, tell me a little bit, what kind of construction work do you do, Jesse?
Everything. I mean, I did a full remodel myself on a house last month, and then right now I'm doing like a paint job on the outside of the house, eaves and fascia board, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I'm almost done, but can you hear the plane flying by right now?
Yeah, I do. I do. I love the sound effects. That's what that makes this all so cool.
I live fairly close to the Burbank Airport.
Okay.
And I was standing outside because I couldn't really hear you very well.
Oh, I see. I'm sorry. Well, what about, you know, now you are a musician. Are you playing in clubs and stuff?
I did a whole lot when I first moved out here. And it's kind of slowed down, and I kind of, you know, sort of fell into a life and not going crazy with the whole music thing. When I first moved out here, I played everywhere. I played at the Whiskey and the Roxy and like all the places out here with my band that I was like, yeah, I'm gonna make it when I first moved here. But it came down to earth a bit. I got married and all that. And
now your band is the LPs, right?
Yeah.
And the latest disc that you sent me is Earthbound. Is this your first, or is how many have you done?
That's one of a few, but that's the most recent.
Well, it is very cool, and I've had it on during times when we're not running shows because I can't play music if we've got shows going on, and it's astonishingly good.
Oh, thank you.
You go out, you play your own material in bars or clubs or whatever. Do any covers, anything like that?
Well, actually, that record, a friend of mine and I got together and kind of just said, let's just do what we want. You know, we were kind of both. He's more of a studio musician, and he used to play with this band called Power Man 5000 back in the late 90s, and I helped him actually build the studio, and to pay me back, he said, let's record some of your acoustic stuff, and it just sort of turned into like a bigger thing, and that's basically what the record.
Well, you know, it's a really slick looking, you know, this goes to show how shallow I am. It's a slick looking disc, Jesse. And the packaging, the insert on the jewel case, it's all, and the music is just dandy good.
Yeah.
And I'm looking here at the credits. Let's see, guitar, violin, balalaika, percussion, and then your partner Dorian, drums, bass, guitar, keyboards, percussion, and vocal. Wow.
He's a multi-talented guy.
Well, I mean, you're not exactly chopped liver. So, you know,
I'm a songwriter.
Well, I tell you what, you know, our good friend and my fellow host on the network, John Fox, is a musician as well, and I'm glad you called in because it reminds me that I need to shoot him a couple of tracks so he can hear this too, because this is just darn good music.
That would be great. I heard a couple of his shows that's really good too.
Well, he's just had dandies. We moved him. See, way back when he was doing what would have been, I guess, 8 o'clock your time in the morning. That was middle of the night. I mean, you know, prop your eyeballs open with toothpicks kind of thing for him down in Australia. But now that he's on late night here, it's the middle of his day there, and I tell you what, he is putting out a whopper of a show.
Nice.
And it's so exciting to see all this stuff coming along. Of course, we got Peter Godbold's show coming up here in a few minutes, Joe Vecchio after that, and then John. I'm so proud to know that the shows are reaching where they reach. You know, it just tickled me to death to hear from you, and it's amazing to see the little artist community that we've got going here. We've got painters, we've got poets, we've got songwriters, musicians. I'm still waiting for the sculptor to join the fold, but you know, I think that'll happen in time.
I'm sure it will.
Well, Jesse,
yeah,
go ahead.
I've been telling everybody about the horn, so you know.
Well, you know, I was talking
a little bit, right?
Exactly, and I mentioned earlier, it was probably before you tuned in. I've I have these bizarre little dreams because I eat, sleep, drink, and live what we do here. And I have this recurring dream where where all of us at the Horn wind up at some sort of shindig in L.A. and there's, like, you know, velvet curtains and, you know, rope lines and, you know, all the fun stuff. I don't know. Maybe the collective energy is sort of coming together to push us in a direction. That'd be cool.
It could totally work out. That could happen.
It could. Hey, you know, miracles happen, and the harder we work, the more likely the miracle, right?
Yeah, and when it does happen, it's going to seem smaller than it is, but it's going to be the real thing.
Exactly. Well, I hope so. You know, I'm having the time of my life. I've never been happier in my life than I am.
Good.
You know, doing this stuff, and I've done some stuff that really made me miserable in the long run. You know, paid a lot better, but made me miserable. So, on the whole, on balance, I think we're better off here.
I heard you say a few comments about hammering nails, but I didn't really exactly know what you meant.
Well,
is that the miserable thing?
The miserable thing was basically
corporate shit.
Yeah, screwing people.
Yeah.
You know, for a nice paycheck, but every day you get up and you go, who do I screw today? And after a while, it gets a little too thick on your soul. No, I've done in my extremely younger days, you know, roofed and painted and stuff like that, and
yeah.
trying to live a life that's got some fullness and breadth and scope to it.
Yeah.
But I always wind up coming back behind a microphone because it's, I don't know, it's either the magnet and the microphone drawing me to it, or something even more psychotic.
The electromagnet is powerful.
It is. I can tell you, it a little bit before 6 o'clock every night, it sucks me all the way across the house and into this chair. Well, Jesse, we got to roll on where it shows end, but man, it's so good to hear from you.
Thanks, Bob.
Don't be a stranger, and, you know, I hope, God, it'd be nice if you could catch who did that, because
I feel more comfortable now. I feel like I can actually call in and not be uncomfortable to call in.
We've never lost a caller yet, and I tell you what, any time the spirit moves you, Jesse, you know you're welcome.
Thanks, Bob.
You take care now.
Have a good night.
And best to your wife.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow, that's cool. I love hearing from folks for the first time, and the second, and the third, and the fourth, and the fifth. That's just, you know, that's great energy to end the show on this evening, and that's what we're going to do. I don't often get requests for readings, but I do have one, and I'm going to do it. Tomorrow being prayer meeting, tomorrow would be an appropriate time to do it, and so I'm absolutely going to get to it. I promise that. Thanks, everybody, for joining in, listening, screaming at the speakers, calling, emailing, chatting in the chat room, blogging on headonradionetwork.com. Thank you. It's the community that we're trying to build, and you prove that it's worth building. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer in Sydney, Australia, coming up at midnight Eastern time with All Foxed Up. Thanks to our IT professional, Peter Godbold of Godbold Computer Services. He's on the way with the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio program, Strictly Confidential. Fascinating guests this evening coming your way in a matter of mere minutes. After Strictly Confidential, 11 o'clock Eastern time, of course, your nightly late-night cup of joe. All of that is still on the way right here on America's Liberal Voice, the Head On Radio Network. Many thanks to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk. If you value what happens here, you value what happens at whiterosesociety.org. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you. We'll be right back.
This is the Quality News Network. In Washington, D.C., the U.S. Justice Department will take a new look at a dormant inquiry into the federal warrantless wiretap program. Rekindling of the investigation indicates a major shift in policy just days after new Attorney General Michael Mukasey took office. Investigators were denied security clearance last year, forcing the inquiry to be shelved. $1.6 trillion is the cost a Democratic committee has put on the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. A report released today includes so-called hidden costs, like long-term health care for veterans and interest payments on money borrowed to fight the war. The U.S. military is pulling 3,000 soldiers out of the Diyala province, taking the edge off of last summer's controversial 30,000 troop increase. Most of the brigade will be home by Christmas. Four Turkish soldiers were killed in battles with Kurdistan Workers' Party guerrillas as Turkey sent special forces to the region bordering northern Iraq. Turkish officials have threatened an incursion into northern Iraq to root out rebels using the mountains as a base for further border attacks. Two people were killed, 10 injured when a bomb exploded at the Philippines House of Representatives. The blast killed Congressman Wahab Akbar, who reportedly had ties to an Islamic extremist group. Iran is handing over a set of blueprints showing how to mold uranium metal into the shape of warheads. The release of the documents meets a key demand of the UN nuclear agency. While an upcoming UN report may say that Iran is cooperating, it may not be enough to stop the call for a third set of UN sanctions against that country. South Korea is asking the U.S., China, and North Korea to begin negotiations aimed at producing an official peace treaty to replace the armistice ending the Korean War 5 decades ago. Israeli President Shimon Peres and Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas are both in agreement that the upcoming Middle Eastern peace conference is an historic opportunity and that failing to reach agreement would mean more trouble for that region. The conference is set for Annapolis, Maryland, later.